What's up, everyone? It's Michael Scotto, senior NBA insider for HoopsHype.com and the host of the HoopsHype podcast. The Brooklyn Nets have begun their offseason with a splash, with the expected hiring of their new head coach, Jordy Fernandez. So with that in mind, I'm joined on the pod by my friend Brian Lewis, who covers the Nets for the New York Post. And we're going to break down how Jordy got the job and what's ahead for Brooklyn this offseason. Could be a busy one. Brian, what's up, brother? Now that we've got the player exit interviews done, next thing up eventually is going to be a Sean Marks presser and Jordy Fernandez. But we know that's coming, so I figured I'd start the off-season preview with you now. How's everything going as you get ready for that?
Everything is well. How you doing?
I'm peachy, brother. You know, it's this is like my Super Bowl, man. I love when, you know, whole league can transform in an off-season. We've got the playoffs going on, draft combine coming up, exciting times. And obviously exciting times for Jordy Fernandez. You know, I believe you had mentioned on the New York Post about there being 10 to 12 candidates for the Nets in this process. And it narrows down to Jordy Fernandez, a first-time head coach. And I had remember talking with Mike Brown recently when he was in town, when they played both the Nets and the Knicks recently. And when we spoke, he said that he felt Jordy Fernandez would get a head coaching job and he expected him to be gone this summer from the Kings, but wasn't sure at that time Brooklyn or where it would be. It seemed like it was on that path after his Canadian national team work this summer. This is a guy that in the annual NBA GM survey was voted the best assistant coach in the league. He's worked for Michael Malone. We touched on Mike Brown. From your vantage point, how did Brooklyn land on Jordy Fernandez as the guy going forward to lead this team?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, the search started a while ago, you know, as we know, over a month, probably closer to 6 or 7 weeks. So it's pretty exhaustive, which is something I think they needed to do after after Ollie and after JV and after Steve Nash. I think they needed to go back to searching far and wide and not just, for lack of a better term, settling. And I think the guy that had been the most successful of the lot had been Kenny Atkinson, which was the last exhaustive search they had, which I think is kind of ironic because I think Jordy has a lot of Kenny Atkinson traits, right? I mean, this is a guy who is, for lack of a better term, a gym rat of a coach. And all that talk that we used to hear about Nets culture is like a drinking game. Nets culture this, Nets culture that. A lot of that culture went out the door when they fired Kenny. I think Jordy is the kind of guy who can bring some of that same culture back. Now, as you correctly point out, it was a wide search. Mike Budenholzer was part of that. But from what I'm led to believe, his contract demands were rather high.
As in like how much he wanted to be paid? Or
yeah, well, both. A lot of money for a lot of years.
I mean, it's to be expected. I could see that.
It is to be expected. The numbers that I've heard that I can't share are probably beyond even my wildest expectations.
if I give you a number, can you say over or under?
Yeah, sure.
$8 million.
Over.
All right, one more. I hope it ain't $15 million.
No, I hadn't heard that.
Okay. Yeah, but I could see a 10.
But my 10 point is, I mean, you're talking a lot of money and a whole lot of years. So, you know, I can understand why when you are not a team that is going to win a title next year, where you might want to say, you know what, this guy's, all the GMs voted him the best assistant coach in the league. He's fast rising. He's hardworking. He has an ability to connect with players and be hard driving, but not be abrasive, which again is something that Bud has been accused of being. It makes sense. It makes sense to hitch your wagon and say, you know what? Let's build with this guy. That's how I think you come to a Jordy versus, you know, say a Bud on one side or a Kevin Young on the other side.
I think it's interesting that, you know, you touch on Bud. Obviously, Mike Budenholzer was the most, the best known name, certainly for his accolades. And
of course,
I had heard that Joe Tsai liked Budenholzer as a potential candidate, given his championship pedigree. Sources close to Budenholzer had told me that he's open to coaching in a big market. Now, Brooklyn is within a big market, so it fit that. So it made sense from that aspect, even though the Nets are not ready to be a championship contender immediately, as you pointed out. I would say that while he may have been somewhere in the finalist grouping, I don't think he was as high as, to my understanding, as certainly Jordy Fernandez, Kevin Young as well. I'll touch a little bit on Kevin Young, who was the runner-up and an assist. I believe he's actually the associate head coach with Phoenix. Yes. Yeah, and
was.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the thing with Kevin Young was he coached Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson when they were in Phoenix. Now, at the end of the season, media availability, Mikal talked about the success he had in Brooklyn last year. I should say, coming up off the trade, was based on them running stuff for him similar to what the Phoenix Suns ran for him, where Kevin Young was the offensive coordinator. Now, neither Mikal Bridges or Cam Johnson, when I asked them about, you know, kind of what's going on with Kevin Young and their thoughts, and you did as well, they didn't want to publicly comment on the coaching search, but I am told that both players had good things to say about Young during their time with the Suns behind the scenes. So I certainly think he would have got a vote of confidence from those guys had he gotten there. But, you know, Young, quality of life, closer to home for him, BYU, more years, good money to be a college coach.
Was an interesting very good money.
Yeah.
Very good money. A lot, millions of which were kicked in by a friend of his. So he's very close with one of their boosters. And there is a Mormon element to it.
And I mean, with that said, you know, I think the guy that kind of got a little underplayed here in terms of where he was as a potential finalist, I would say he's James Borrego, who's with New Orleans right now. And, you know, right next to Willie Green there on the bench. And for Borrego, I had heard Marks and he chatted when the Pelicans were in town, according to sources. And, you know, the Pelicans played the Nets towards the end of the year, ironically similar to Sacramento playing the Nets towards the end of the year. It's almost as if the NBA script had penned it this way. And, you know, he's been instrumental behind the scenes helping Willie Green on the Pelicans bench this season. I do see Borrego inching his way back to becoming a head coach again. This was a guy who improved Charlotte's win totals, I believe it was, by 10 games each of the past two seasons. I think that he's a guy that got a little underrated in this search, but a guy that was maybe more thought of than people realize. So they end up going with Jordy Fernandez. Overall, yeah, I think it's some people then ask me, like, well, is this a signal that they're going to rebuild? What does this mean? And to me, you made a great point about him being compared to Kenny Atkinson. I think for Jordy Fernandez, they have young guys on this roster they have to develop, whether it's Cam Thomas, you know, if Nick Claxton comes back, you got Noah Clowney, et cetera. I think he can do that defensively, where this team underwhelmed, given the talent that it had and the switchability and all that jazz. He's supposed to help in that department. That was part of his responsibilities with the Sacramento Kings. And he's got some upside. So overall, I'm good with the hire. Like, it made sense to me. Did you have any other kind of final thoughts on him and what his hiring means for the direction of the Nets?
Well, one, I mean, I would agree that he is the Kings players call him their defensive coordinator. So yes, that is his specialty. I would definitely second your comments that the Nets underachieved on that end of the court. It's incomprehensible to me how you have. Now, I understand that you don't have Ben Simmons playing, and he is their most accomplished defensive player. But when you have this many guys who are supposed to be above average to good defenders and these kind of wingspans, and you can't stop anybody, that is a concern. But yes, he's supposed to be sound on that end of the court. I think he will help them on that end of the court. And I would caution against saying assistant equals rebuild. I'm not sure that all assistants are created equal. I think when you have a guy like Jordy Fernandez, I think there is probably a happy medium. I don't think when you have a guy like him that it necessarily signals a tear down to the studs rebuild. I think it probably signals maybe a slow burn.
I don't know why when you said that, I thought of like Usher, gotta let it burn. Oh, man. Well, what a moment. But as far as... as far as, you know, with Jordy, whether it's the happy medium, and I could see that. But what's interesting is Brooklyn's top free agent, an unrestricted one at that, Nick Claxton, recently said that he wanted somebody to approach him as a man and be transparent and whatnot. So, well, now that's going to happen potentially. It'll be interesting to see how that affects Nick's free agency. So, that's been a hot topic lately, given it was interesting because Nick started the year saying that, you know, he wanted to be back and he loved it here in an interview with me earlier in the year. And now that it's closer to free agency, more of the business acumen is coming in where it's like, well, it's a business we got to see. And he's unrestricted and looking forward to the process, which I truthfully believe he is. Who doesn't like to be wined and dined, right? So what does this mean for Nick? And you've got, there's a lot to kind of pack in here, but I'll try to do it succinctly. So Oklahoma City has cap space, and some with the Nets wonder if they'd make a run at Nick Claxton. But the Thunder is at their best with Chet Holmgren at the five. So I'm a little skeptical of that. Two teams, however, with the ability to make a sign and trade agreement potentially happen are the Memphis Grizzlies and the New Orleans Pelicans. Now, I know there are members of the Pelicans organization who like Claxton, and it's worth noting the future of Jonas Valanciunas is uncertain, given how close the team will be to the luxury tax next season and his lack of usage at the end of games, including the play-in loss to the Lakers. I know Grizzlies fans have been in my mentions and quote tweeting the Claxton video where he talked about being an unrestricted free agent, but I'm not sure yet how high the Grizzlies are on Claxton. So through my conversations with executives, I'd say that Claxton remains around the $20 million figure annually per year. I think $25 million would be his ceiling as of now. Brian, do you think that, and you asked him about this, that, you know, the Nets have kind of made it clear that they want him back. And I ask you, do you think he will be back? And if not, who do you see as the top contenders that could pry him away in unrestricted free agency from Brooklyn?
If you're asking me over or under 50% that Clax is back, I think over 50%. I think the Nets have been fully aware that they were going to be staring down the barrel of this unrestricted free agency and have been preparing for it for some time. Maybe I'd go so far as to say fretting over it, because they've said, oh man, we have to carve out the money for this. This is coming. How do we do this? But they want him back. Now, as far as Klax, yeah, listen, Klax told me last year that he wants to be back. Klax told me at the beginning of this year he wants to be back. Klax talked to you about it. Now, obviously, with free agency right now on his doorstep, he gets with his representation. His representation says, listen, this is a business decision. Maybe you should watch what you say. Right? So, of course, he is going to be more conservative in those statements, as well he should. You know, this isn't playtime. This is the man's vocation. This isn't an avocation. This is his job. So, of course, he's going to be conservative about what he says and leave all doors open. I do think he's more than likely coming back here. I think you mentioned, as an example, the Grizzlies. I think a lot of that is purely driven because of AAU connections with Ja, right? But this isn't AAU. You have to have money to pay a guy, right? Now, yes, you're right. They could sign and trade. Yes, I understand that. So now you're hard capping teams, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if that's a position that they want to be in.
Agreed. I'm just throwing out the potential that it could.
They could. I'm not sure that that's what will happen. I think what will happen is that he'll be back here. Mm-hmm. I'm not great at putting numbers on things, but I think it's more than 50%. You know?
Yeah.
I'm not great at, I'm not a gambler. I'm not Dante Porter. So I'm not.
Oh, a low blow.
I'm not gambling on anything now.
A low blow.
Man, give away a whole NBA career over seven. Don't even get me started.
Well, I mean, in fairness, he was a two-way player. I don't know how much of a whole NBA career he had, but either way.
Yeah, zero now. I know that. That number I can figure.
Well, yeah, that's for sure. And you know damn well that they're going to ask Michael Porter Jr. about this, which is probably the last thing that he needs during a playoff run where the Nuggets are trying to repeat as back-to-back champions. But don't worry, I will not ask you to put a percentage on this as far as, even though I know you said over 50%. Ultimately, I think Brooklyn has to bring him back. You can't lose this guy for nothing. And I think you mentioned the word fretting almost, that could be where they're at. I don't know if that's the correct adjective, but it's certainly plausible. I think for them, they almost have to. Not to interrupt,
I want to be clear. I think the fretting was last summer on carving out the money to sign him.
Yeah.
I think they are reasonably confident that they can get. Now, if you're asking me as of today, I think they're reasonably confident that they can come to some sort of agreement. I'm saying the fretting, meaning we have to clear a path and make sure that we have our roster in such a way that we can afford to sign this guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's what I mean as of last summer.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, look, you can't lose this kid for nothing. I hate to say it, but he jokes. Like, he bet on himself. He gambled on himself that he took a short-term deal, and it's paying off because now he's going into unrestricted free agency. I'm not saying he bet on the games.
No, I know. Yeah, no, you're right.
But he did.
He bet on himself.
It worked.
And you're right. He took the contract that was a year shorter, get to free agency a year earlier, and it's going to pay off.
And so now the Nets not only have to try to retain him in free agency, but they've got to decide, do they go big game hunting here and looking to trade for a star, or do they wait until 2025 when they could have potentially $80 to $90 million in cap space? And so, well, people will say to me, how could the Nets make a big trade? How can you even say that? You know, they weren't that good last year, blah, blah, blah. Well, they've got Ben Simmons' $40 million expiring contract. Doesn't matter if this guy touches the court, shoots three-pointers on Instagram, comes in the best shape of his life. He could play the whole season. He could play 1 minute. Doesn't matter. The contract is what's valuable as an expiring contract, which is huge if you're going to trade for a star. They've got 7 tradable first-round picks. And you have other players. You certainly have Cam Thomas, who I certainly think should be somewhere in the most improved player of the year conversation as a guy that more than doubled his scoring and went from a fringe rotation player at times last season to a starter and one of the top young scorers in the league. You've got Dorian Finney-Smith, who entering the 2024-25 season is under contract at a reasonable price, and then he has a player option, so he could become a free agent. And you've got Dennis Schroeder, who's on an expiring contract, and respectfully, I would say is viewed as a stopgap point guard for the Nets next season if he's on this roster. So, Brian, with that said, I know in the past you haven't been able to, you haven't been at liberty to say who the Nets could go after. Donovan Mitchell. You know, that's who I'm looking at. Certainly, whether it's Donovan Mitchell, and I, you can put my name on it, I don't care. Do they trade for Donovan Mitchell, a player the Nets have coveted, or wait for him to become a free agent in 2025? Or, you know, do they try to trade for another star or wait to use that cap space for somebody else in 2025? Is it big game hunting for the Nets this summer, 2024? Or are they punting for a bigger move ahead, whether it's at the trade deadline or 2025, in your opinion?
I think everything that they have said, and more important, everything that they've done, because I pay a lot more attention to what people do than what they say. Everything that they've done implied to me for the last, whatever, year and change, that this is a reset for 2025, right? Now, I have also added the caveat that there are a few, and by few, I mean damn few, players who could accelerate that process, right? Who could make you get up before 2025 and expend assets. Mm-hmm. Donovan Mitchell is one of those few.
Attaboy. Right?
Now, I don't see a way that Donovan Mitchell just walks away in free agency. Yeah, I mean, of course, there can always be a sign of trade. But my point is, if you know to a certainty that Donovan is leaving, one would think you're bringing back assets for that. Now, yes. Whenever that is, that could be in the summer. That could be in January. That could be at the deadline. But one would think that you are getting the best deal possible for you and bringing back some assets. So I don't know whether you consider that big game hunting if the big game is just wandering by your front door and you shoot it. I don't know if that's big game hunting anymore. I think you're aiming for 2025 and that's your plan, but you have to be flexible enough to pivot in case Donovan Mitchell, a native New Yorker who happens to love New York, whose people are still in New York, who has friends on the roster, now becomes available, right? Right. At that point, you have to say, well, you know, the plan was summertime, but here we have our shot in January. Or here we have our shot at the deadline. So we have to take it. And we have set ourselves up in a way that we are flexible enough to take it now. And now he's not the only one, mind you. I'm just saying he seems the most likely one. If some other player of similar caliber somehow becomes disgruntled, because as we have seen, as anybody that even remotely follows the Nets has seen, superstars can become disgruntled very quickly. So if some other superstar becomes disgruntled, if, you know, Giannis decides, you know what? I have given a lot of really great years to Milwaukee. Now I want to leave. Whatever. Yes, there are a few players that would make them pivot off of 2025. I'm just saying that's where your baseline is right now, is the summer of 2025.
Brian, I don't know if you saw this, but Donovan Mitchell recently said, you're judged by conference finals and finals. That's my mindset. That's kind of where I'm at and where my head is. First round, second round is cool. I'm taking it one round at a time, but my goal is to make the conference finals and get to the NBA finals. You know what I mean? That's what I'm judged on. And with that said, I am telling you that there will be plenty of eyes on the Cleveland Cavaliers going into these playoffs and a lot of pressure on that team. Because of that, I think for J.B. Bickerstaff as well, as the head coach, certainly. And there are going to be other teams that people are monitoring as well. Former Net Kevin Durant and the Suns had sky-high expectations. How do they fare? The Minnesota Timberwolves, given the ownership struggle with what are they doing going forward with that payroll and the high luxury tax implications coming? How far do they go? Is it worth paying all that? A lot to certainly look at ahead. Also, just for bookkeeping purposes, the Nets also have four tradable player exceptions. About over one, a little over 20 million, 11.9, 9.5, and 6.8. If they operate over the tax, which over the salary cap, excuse me, they, you know, I think you can look at them having the non-taxpayer mid-level and then the 4.7 million biannual exception. I don't know if they're going to use it, but it'll be at their disposal. So they've got a lot to figure out there. Now, they have some extension candidates that are eligible. You've got Mikal Bridges, who I think Bobby Marks noted can get 3 years, $113 million starting October 1st. But I think the bigger one here is because my thing with Mikal is, you know, 3 years, $113 million. I mean, I fear the Nets. I think they would do it, but I think that probably be below what Mikal could get down the line. So I don't see that yet. Cam Johnson is interesting because he's eligible for an extension. He's coming off a good year. And I thought what Bobby Marks was talking about was interesting because he had mentioned that his Cam Thomas's free agent hold next summer is $12.1 million. So if they extend him for $20 million a year, they're going to lose cap space. They're going to lose, you know, $8 million in cap space there if they did that, just for reference. So,
and you also hamstring some of your abilities to sequence. Right. Like if you're looking at next summer, you want to be able to sequence contracts, which
right,
you're taking away your ability to do that if you give him his money now, if you sign him to the extension now. So it's just, I'm not sure it's great business to do it now. Not that anybody asked, but if I look at this as a general manager, I probably wouldn't do it now. But I would tell him that. I would tell him that I'm not doing it, and I would tell him why I'm not doing it. If I plan on keeping him and I plan on making him a piece of my foundation for goodwill, I would sit him down and his representation down and say, listen, I can't give you this extension now. This is why I can't give it to you now, because these are the plans that we have and it mucks up our plans. But we want you and we value you.
And with
but that's said, me.
And with that said, you know, I know you're not one to put percentages or, you know, be a betting man, but I will say that as of today, I don't see Cam Johnson and the Nets agreeing to a contract.
You mean Cam Thomas?
Oh, excuse me. I said Cam. Excuse me. As of today, I don't see Cam Thomas and the Nets agreeing to a contract extension. But it's a situation I'll certainly be monitoring all summer. I think Mikal waits as well. And so,
yeah, I would put that less than 50%.
I'd put it less than that. You know, I know, like you say, like, what's the number? But But I do think they got to figure out, to your point, is Cam Thomas part of the future or not? Because it's going to be interesting to see what he can command. Because if Cam Thomas does what he did last year, now you got some consistency here. And it's going to be very interesting to see. I think he has helped himself this year with his value overall across the league. Better passer than people had thought. And if you look at his numbers as a scorer, shooting efficiency is there. So he helped himself this year for sure. I think he's going to have a huge summer and come in, you know, looking to crush it and get paid. And you and I have joked about this in the media room, but certainly another guy that's going to eventually have to look to get paid is Ben Simmons. Now, when I had Bobby Marks previously on the Hoops High podcast, he said he thinks Simmons is worth a minimum contract as of now by the time he hits free agency in the summer of 2025, given everything up to this point. Now, you and I have bantered this, so I might as well banter it here. Does it make sense for Simmons to play going forward if that's the case and he's going to be worth a minimum given his back problems? Now, one league source predicted that he loves the NBA lifestyle too much to just quit and walk away if that was the case. So what are you expecting this summer from for Ben Simmons' future, whether he's on the Nets or not? And if he is, what are you expecting out of this guy next year, given all his injury woes that he's had to battle?
Oh, goodness. I
asked the hard questions, Brian. I don't, you know.
That's multi-layered. I expect him to be working out this summer. I mean, he's cleared medically to start working out. So I expect him to work out and do all of his individual stuff and come in, you know, all yoked up and looking, you know, fit. I expect him hopefully to be taking part in team. When I say team workouts, I mean, you know what I'm saying, getting together with his teammates and playing pickup, because those guys all did that last summer. So I would hope that he would partake in that this summer. And I would expect that he would be taking at least play at least as well next year as he did earlier this season. Actually, frankly, I would hope that he would take another step up. What I don't know is how long he'll play before his back acts up again. He might play 2 weeks. Maybe he'll play 2 months. I don't know.
I was going to say 2 games.
Well, could be. You don't know. That's the whole problem. You just don't know. So I don't know, and how long will he miss when he goes out? Will he miss, again, will he miss a week and a half, or will he miss a month and a half? Who knows? Now, again, I don't know whether that's going to be in Brooklyn or elsewhere. You know, but let's assume that he starts the season in Brooklyn. Then we also have to consider, if he's starting the season in Brooklyn, that doesn't mean that he won't be moved in January or February if he could actually stay on the court at least a little bit.
Yeah.
And they find a big trade, Cleveland or someplace that works. And again, it could be part of a three-team trade. You know, it's not like three-team trades are rare or hard to find.
You know, it's funny. I never understood fans that would, you know, get in the mentions and say, well, would they buy him out? What, there's no purpose in buying him out.
I'm not sure how he would view that as to his benefit.
I don't think it's to anybody's
benefit. I don't see how the Nets would view that as to their benefit.
Yeah. It's like, you know, he's a, this is, a tradable asset now. This at least gives you some flexibility to work with here, as you coughed and said Cleveland. I laughed at that, as if it would be part of a Donovan Mitchell trade. But yeah, I mean, it'll be an interesting summer. You know, obviously he and his agent, Bernie Lee, by the way, I don't even know if I should say he. I know he did like one interview, but certainly, you know, he was hyped up a lot going into last season and even during the year. You know, I think Bernie Lee had tweeted about him being able to fix their problems. That did not come to fruition. So it's going to be an interesting summer for Ben. But while we don't know what his future is going to be as one of the Nets players, I'll tell you this, Noah Clowney, had a heck of an end of the season for the Nets, and he has been called the golden child, I've heard by a few people there. They view him as a power forward and a small ball five alongside Nick Claxton, I'm told, which is obviously important given we're projecting what is going to be the future for the Nets. I spoke with Clowney at the end of the year. He told me, and I thought this was one of the most detailed answers for a kid. Because, you know, you tell everybody, you ask everybody, what do you want to work on? And they say, oh, you know everything. But he actually went into detail. He said he wants to improve as a perimeter defender and a rim protector when he's the primary defender on defense. On offense, he wants to shoot more consistently and get his teammates better shots moving the ball. When he's driving the ball, he wants to be comfortable going both ways, left or right, and improve his footwork. Funny enough, his veteran mentor, first guy he mentions is Nick Claxton. So again, certainly think it's going to behoove the Nets to try to bring him back. He also talked to Dorian Finney-Smith, Dennis Smith Jr., and Cam Johnson. I think, Brian, the question...
He also talked about defending guards. Remember that. He also talked about when he was switched out on quick guards, staying laterally and defending them too. I mean, he gave really good, mature, self-aware, complete answers.
Mm-hmm. And I mean... It looked like, especially towards the end of the year, he kind of leapfrogged De'Ron Sharp in the rotation a little bit there. So I think that's going to be interesting to see where Noah Clowney starts the year next year in terms of his ranking on the depth chart. So, I mean, what have you heard as far as their plans for Noah Clowney looking ahead? Because he was one of the bright spots in what was an underwhelming season for the Nets.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, he'll be in Vegas playing summer league. I'm interested, even less than what their plans are for him. I'm interested in how he impacts their plans for other people. In other words, you have, as you point, you know, you mentioned CJ Cam Johnson, and you mentioned Dorian Finney-Smith. And you mentioned De'Ron Sharp. Now, before, you essentially had two guys splitting the power forward spot, and you had a backup center. That was before Noah forced his way into the rotation and into the picture. Well, all right. De'Ron is a young, cheap asset. Doe is, frankly, a 30-year-old who is good in the locker room, is tough, and can make winning plays. That guy that I'm describing, who, by the way, you know, is under contract for next year and has a player option the year after that, that is the kind of guy that belongs on a contender and who you would think a contender would give you something for. I'm interested in seeing whether Noah's rapid development forces them to take a look at one of those three guys and move one of those three guys to make room for him.
I like your thinking. Well, we've now come to the part in the pod where, as you touched on, whether a guy's going to be moving or not, we'll play a little stay or go, okay? So we got a couple of free agents coming up for the Nets. I'll start briefly with Dennis Smith. When I spoke to Dennis, he told me that he wants to secure a multi-year deal. And he said, I believe I should be able to get that this summer, but we'll see. You never know with the NBA, but I'm hoping this is the year. I can secure that. So naturally, I followed up and I said, well, do you see yourself back with the Nets? He said, I don't know. I wouldn't mind it. I've got a great relationship with these guys, and the medical and training staff is one of the best I've ever seen in the league. And I've got a real perspective on that because I've been around. I would welcome that. So he's going to look to prioritize a good situation with a legit role on a team that's consistent, and he can win. He did say he wants to be somewhere with stability, because as he's looked back on his career, he hasn't had that. So that's the one guy I'll give you the most like lead in before we do the rapid fire. So Dennis Smith Jr., stay or go?
Why stay or go? You mean, do I think he'll be back, or yep. should he? You mean, do I think?
You think he'll be back? Or you
my
think he's
supposition
gone?
Is that he's gone. That's my supposition. Particularly, you know, if you're looking for a 2 or 3 year deal, I think he's gone.
Lonnie Walker, a guy who said he's looking for a home, had an inconsistent role at the end of the season. Stay or go?
Lonnie's a question mark for me. I could see them breaking up. I mean, he played well, and I think he earned, in my opinion, a raise over a minimum. They could break up an exception and give him some extra change. That way, over 50%. I don't know how much over, but I could see him coming back. Maybe.
Interesting. I'm going to go the opposite way. I think they're going to be on. I think he'll be gone. Just my opinion as of now, because I think there are going to be other teams that are going to eye his scoring, and when he had like an inconsistent role, I don't know if you're signing up for that again if you're him. Mm-hmm. Next up on a list, Trendon Watford, stay or go?
I actually liked what I saw out of Trendon, but. Something tells me, again, under 50% that he's gone.
Under 50% he's gone? As in,
I'm saying I think it's under 50% that he's back. I think he will be gone.
Okay.
I think Dennis and Trendon are both under 50%. Lonnie, it wouldn't shock me if he's gone either, but I'm saying, you noticed a difference. You know, different coaches treated him differently. I have no idea what, you know, how Jordy's going to value him, because this is an offensive player and a defensive coach. I don't know. Frankly, they could all three be gone.
This is what I'm saying. And then you've got Kata Bates Diop, who ironically has a $2.65 million player option, which I could see him exercising, certainly.
Yeah, I could see that.
So that's the big thing there. Other than that, last thing I'll leave you with before we go, they got the vacancy left by Jeff Peterson in the front office. I'm personally keeping an eye on several candidates. And what?
And Gizreel.
I'll get to that, sir. I'll get to you on that in a minute. I'm keeping an eye on Pelicans executive Bryson Graham as a potential candidate if they go outside the organization to fill the role. He could also make sense in Detroit, given his ties to Monty Williams. I know they're looking for an executive now, a president. I don't know if he would get that high, but we'll see. And if you're looking internally, two candidates that could make sense for Brooklyn would be B.J. Johnson and J.R. Holden. As for your Ryan Gizreel mention, yes, his vacancy is also needs to be filled. This sick man tweeted the news about Ryan Gizreel. What was it, 4 o'clock or 4:30 in the morning?
I mean, at that hour, what's 30 minutes between friends? 4:30, whatever.
I happened to be up because I was working on something for the morning. And I said, I'll be damned. This guy really... And I said it to him in the meeting room. I said, I'll be damned. 4 o'clock in the morning, this guy said, I'm going to be damned if I get scooped on that. And I give you credit. I don't know if you heard like my cheeky voice in the background busting your chops. But man, and then the story came out, you know, in the New York Post Was it the morning?
Yeah, that's why I tweeted it, because I couldn't wait any longer. I couldn't wait.
These are the struggles.
I'm tapping out like MMA. I'm tapping out. I'm tweeting this and going to sleep.
These are the struggles that people don't understand goes through, you know, a media person. You never want to get beat. And if somebody puts it out in the morning at like 7 or 8 in the morning, you're slamming the table going, come exactly. on. I could have had that. So, Brian, I appreciate you joining me, brother. This was a thorough pod, which the people wanted, truthfully. They had been in my mentions asking for it. So, how to give the people what they want. I'm looking forward to seeing you soon for the next press conference. And certainly, it's going to be a busy summer ahead. But we'll have fun in Vegas, my man.
All right. Thanks for having me. And I'll see you at the presser. And definitely see you in Vegas.
There you go. I also want to thank everybody else for tuning in. If you want to hear more episodes of the Hoops High Podcast with guest appearances from NBA players, coaches, executives, and media members such as Brian Lewis of the New York Post, you can like and subscribe to it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and anywhere else you listen to podcasts. You can keep up with my tweets on Twitter at Mike A. Scotto. Make sure you're following Brian too. He's at NYPost_Lewis. Until next time, I'm your host, Michael Scotto, wishing you and yours all the best.